It was September 2004, a Saturday, and Gail McLaughlin had scheduled several people to look at a home she was renting, almost like an open house.
People were coming in and filling out applications to rent the house and looking at it.
Things were finishing up, and McLaughlin was getting ready to leave when a car pulled up. In it were two young men who had been by to look at the house earlier.
The one of them put a gun in my face.
And he told the other one to tie her up. They took her purse and grabbed her ATM card. The man with the gun sent the other to go get cash.
Of course, as soon as the young man left, I knew what was going to happen.
The remaining man took her into a room and raped her.
I remember laying there thinking, just hurry up and get it over with and get on with what you want to do. You know, if it's going to shoot me, whatever you're going to do, just hurry up.
He didn't shoot her, but put McLaughlin in a closet and closed the door. Her hands had become untied in the scuffle, so when she couldn't see feet beneath the closet door, she took off running to a church down the street.
And I'm just thinking, God, I'm going to get him. I don't care what it takes. He's not going to get by with this.
She would face long odds. The Justice Department estimates only 3% of rapists ever see the inside of a prison. There happened to be people at the church that Saturday who assisted McLaughlin. She called 911. Police came. They went to UAB Hospital and connected her with a crisis center. McLaughlin says many responders and medical personnel were great, but the police officer who arrived initially, not so much.
He was a very unkind, uncaring human being. Could have cared less.
Former victim advocate and Sam Houston State University professor Kathy Latz says, yes, some victims do experience negativity from people who are part of the system, although she says that's improved in recent years. Victims then can be thrown into a law enforcement and legal world that's foreign.
It can be very daunting and unfamiliar. And in addition to that, the process tends to be very long.
For Gail McLaughlin, her process continued by talking to detectives several times and identifying a suspect from a photo lineup. A few weeks later, police picked up 25-year-old Angela White. With a suspect in custody, then came a preliminary hearing, a bail hearing, grand jury testimony. At that bail hearing, McLaughlin found herself in the same room as White. She says he was staring a hole through her.
So I just proceeded to move where I was looking straight at him, and I wouldn't take my eyes off of him. We had a stare down because I was going to let him know, you weren't going to do this to me, and I will see you in hell.
Despite this anger, this focus, McLaughlin says her brain was in a fog. She'd go to work sporadically. She couldn't write a check to pay her bills. She washed her iron in the washing machine.
I don't know how it got in there. Don't remember seeing it. But, you know, the iron still works to this day. I still have it. It'll still work. A good iron.
Those symptoms don't surprise UAB clinical psychologist Josh Klapo. He says crime is a trauma, and the surprise nature of crime makes it more intense. Even something like a burglary, where there's no physical harm, sends a message
that I'm not totally in control. Something has happened that I can't control. And I think more importantly, emotionally, it sends this message, it might happen again.
Klapo says victims can bounce back, but it's difficult. With every question asked by police or a family member, they relive the crime. They can feel re-victimized.
We're forcing, even with the best intent, we're sort of forcing the victim to deal with this in a manner and in a time frame that is not their own. That makes it more challenging. It may be necessary, but it does make it more challenging.
Gail McLaughlin had to relive the crime when the case went to trial. She says court was awful, watching 12 jurors decide whether they believed her. The courtroom, though, brings up an often overlooked dynamic. Perpetrators have constitutionally recognized rights. Think trial by jury or cruel and unusual punishment. But ask someone to name a right for victims?
It's kind of crickets.
Will Marling is the executive director of the advocacy group National Organization for Victims Assistance. He says 33 states, including Alabama, have constitutional protections for victims, but not the federal constitution. These are things such as a right to dignity, respect, and information, a right to assistance and compensation. There is an effort to add a victims' rights amendment to the constitution, which Marling says would create continuity across the country. He adds, rights for victims don't take away rights for the accused.
It really isn't zero sum. It's rights that stand beside each other that, in the course of due process, protect each party appropriately.
Gail McLaughlin believes victims don't always get a fair shake. Still, for her, it turned out okay. The jury returned a guilty verdict. Her case is among that 3%. Angela White was sentenced to life without parole under Alabama's habitual offender law.
Well, there they are. Hey, Charlie. Hi.
Now, 10 years later, McLaughlin's three dogs scurry around her feet in her dining room. They're all rescue animals, she explains. McLaughlin says the hard times lasted for several years after the trial, and the events have left their mark.
I don't trust people. I tried to always give everybody the benefit of the doubt, and I don't give people the benefit of the doubt anymore.
But through medication and counseling, she's doing all right. She has a supportive family. Her boyfriend, who was with her then, is still around. She volunteered as a rape response advocate. Life's not normal, but it's all right. For WBHM, I'm Andrew Yeager.